The Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Well, if you're a young Cuban guy, I bet you might choose baseball as your sport. In the early 60s, Carlos Alvarez, a Cuban immigrant, was introduced to the American game of football at Miami's Northwest Boys Club. He fell in love with it right away. Alvarez went on to play for the University of Florida, and he became an All-American, and he still holds some of Florida's receiving records all these years later. Back then, he was dubbed the Cuban Comet, and he was recently inducted into the Greater Miami Chamber of Commerce Sports Hall of Champions. We spoke to him recently from the studios of WFSU in Tallahassee. Does your family, or I mean just in general, the Cuban-American community here in South Florida even care about football? Or is this a culture still just steeped in baseball?
If they had to choose a game, it would be baseball. And, you know, when I was a little kid growing up in Cuba, my idol was Minnie Minoso. He was the Babe Ruth of Cuban baseball to me. And he had a lot of influence on me. And later on, I'll tell you a little story about him. But I was so influenced by him that I know when I came in Cuba, that's all I played was baseball, a little bit of basketball. And then when I came to the States, I just started playing baseball.
Tell me about that story.
About Minnie Minoso?
Yeah.
Well, you know, for Cubans, it's Minnie Minoso. I still remember his number, 17. That was his number in the Cuban League. And he played mostly for the White Sox. But Minnie, unfortunately, could not play baseball early on in the major leagues because they still didn't have African-American players or Latin players. So he actually came into the league a little bit late from his from when he really started playing baseball, where he could have played much earlier. And to this day, he's not in the Hall of Fame because some of his best years were missed. I'm still upset about that. But he was called the Cuban Comet in the Midwest. That's a nickname that he developed. So when I was at University of Florida, I got the nickname of the Cuban Comet, not knowing at all in any way, shape, or form that Minnie Minoso was my idol, was also the Cuban Comet in the Midwest. For many years, after I played, you know, people would still, you know, joke with me about the Cuban Comet. And I didn't realize that Minnie was the Cuban Comet, too, until I read a story about him. That he in the Midwest area, Chicago and that area of the country, was called the Cuban Comet. So just by luck, my idol and I have the same nickname.
That is fascinating. That really mm-hmm. is. Let's go back to your childhood, because I want to go back to when you started playing this game. As you said, you were a kid who played baseball and basketball. I think you were, what, 11 when you first played football?
You know, we went to a school. I have two brothers that are two older than me, one by 2 years and the other one by three. And I have a sister who is 5 years younger than me. My two brothers and I were always into sports in Cuba because we went to a school, La Salle, which was a private school that emphasized academics but also emphasized being outside and playing sports. We had a great baseball team in that school. So when we came to the States, my dad was absolutely convinced we would never go back to Cuba. In fact, he went to law school with Castro. And when we landed in Key West from a ferry back in the middle of 1960, I remember we landed. He looked at all of us. We had taken our car. That's about the only thing that we were able to take out. And he looked at all of us and said, "Become an American because we're never going back." And, you know, as a 10-year-old, the impact of those words really, you can't comprehend it. What do you mean you're not going back? You know, we're never going back. I just didn't realize it, but he was dead serious. And so when we ended up in Miami, we started living in North Miami. As you know, the Cuban community mostly lived in Southwest Miami, and we moved to North Miami, went to the first school, a parochial school, St. James. And we were the only kids who spoke Spanish. Everybody else, there was no Cuban kids, no other Hispanic kids. We were the only one. So we were basically thrown in the water and told to swim. And we did. It was, you know, at the time was one of the scariest things I've ever done. But it was the foresight of my parents that got us all going fairly quickly. And within the year, we had made enough friends, and some of those friends went to a boys club called the Northwest Boys Club. Nowadays, they're called Northwest Boys and Girls Club. And so we went there and started playing baseball. And then basketball season came around. We played basketball. And then football came around, and I didn't want to play football, didn't understand it or just didn't want to play it. And so because all the other kids were playing it, I decided that I would, that I'd go give it a try. Now, even putting on the equipment was a challenge. As it turned out, I did have some speed, so I was like the fastest kid in the team. They made me the quarterback. I was able to say enough English words to get everybody going to the right play. Not that you had the Dolphin game plan. You had very simple plays, and I became the quarterback, and that's how I started. And it's funny because I'll never forget the first play, and we call a quarterback sweep to the right. And all of a sudden, there's just like the biggest hole in the world. And I just start running, you know. And, 70 yards later, I'm in the end zone, running through the end zone because I didn't even know where you stopped. So I kept on running until there was a fence, and I touched the ball to the fence. Then my teammates came and grabbed me, and we were all running around being really happy. And that was my first touch in a real game of football.
And did you like the game after that?
Man, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And what became so clear to me that I was playing football to become an American. It was the ultimate American sport. I wanted to be an American. I wanted to be accepted. And therefore, football became my way to become an American.
Your parents probably were okay with it.
You know, I had a mother who she's 95 now, who always believed that her children could do anything and would tell you that he can do anything. And I had a dad that was very, very much about following your passion and wherever you wanted to go, so long as you did your best. That's all he wanted. And so they were very supportive.
This is the early 60s. Remind us of what life was like in Miami at that time, especially for recently arrived Cubans.
It's so, so different. It's unbelievably different. Miami was really a small town. I don't know what the population differences were, but it was a really, really a small town. I-95 was not there. It was mostly Americans in terms of there weren't that many Cubans there. The Cubans tended to live either in Southwest Miami, you know, around the famous Calle Ocho, or in Hialeah to some extent. And the population was growing throughout the 60s as more Cubans left. But it was, it was different. You know, you had to overcome certain prejudice about Cubans in Miami. Not that I experienced a lot of it. I experienced a little bit of it. And a couple of times it was very difficult, but like if you go to Miami now and your name is Carlos Alvarez, so is about another 1,000 people named Carlos Alvarez in Miami. But back then, your Carlos Alvarez stuck out. I guess that's a good way to put it. It just stuck out. And there was still some resentment by some people in the community. My brothers and I, we each had a Miami Herald paper route in the morning. You know, one time a lady got really upset at me because I was collecting for my brother Arturo, who had delayed collecting because it had gotten like 3 or 4 months late. And I kind of showed up at the door at his urging to basically say, you know, please pay. And, you know, she just flat out called me a spick and to get out of there. And it just shocked me. I mean, I was stunned. I remember walking out of and just couldn't believe you can't believe the hatred when somebody says that and means it. And as a kid, you get totally confused as to, oh my goodness, you know, what is my value kind of a thing. So it was different. I mean, it's definitely different than it is now. Much more, obviously now it's much more inclusive and the differences like that are marginalized. They're not part of the fabric of Miami at all.
How did that impact your wanting to be an American? And as your father said, become an American. But then you hear something like that.
You want to become an American even more so that nobody can notice. How do you do that with a name like Carlos Alvarez? You know, it makes it a little bit difficult. but you want to make, you know, you want to lose your accent, whatever accent you have. You want it to be fairly articulate, so that people can't notice that maybe Spanish was your first language. I don't know. It probably doubled down on wanting to become an American and so somehow be accepted by Americans as an American. Now, I will tell you this. I did want to become an American, and I do feel I'm an American. But at the same time, I'm very proud and feel like I'm Cuban too. And back then, I wanted to lose that Cuban identity. But when I got to be around 20 years old, 19 or so, 19, 20, I was very happy with my Cuban background and very proud of it. And at the same time, I was very proud of my being an American.
So you were surprised that universities give scholarships, and yet you had quite a few that were offering you scholarships. Is it true you had the University of Florida, but also the University of Miami offered you scholarships?
Yes. University of Miami, Florida, Vanderbilt, Georgia Tech, LSU, and I believe Georgia.
Why did you pick Florida? Why didn't you stay home?
I picked Florida for a few reasons. One, that was probably a pretty big reason, my brother Caesar was going there. But Florida had just gone through the Steve Spurrier era. He had graduated like 2 years before. I used to go to the Hurricane games in the Orange Bowl, and when Florida played, I watched Spurrier play down there, and they could pass. You know, Spurrier obviously had a passing attack, and I was pretty impressed by that because I was a running back in high school. But I was hoping to be a wide receiver in college just because of my size. So I thought overall, you know, my brothers and I are very close, that all of us being there would be a pretty cool thing. Even though really as a kid, I was always rooting for the Hurricanes. The George Myra, the Matt Stork Kendrick, all of those guys, you know, I remember George Myra, like the just scrambling was just a show unto itself.
What was it like for you? You go up to the University of Florida, and I don't know back then how many other Cuban-born players were there or even students.
There were no Cuban-born players, period. No Cubans of any sort in the football team. And, you know, it was a transition. Now, I was pretty well accepted when I got up there, but it was a transition because I'm really dealing with a lot of North Florida guys. They're kind of guys that are hunters and fishermen and, you know, and I'm more of an urban guy, even though now I'm much more of an outdoors guy. But it was a transition, and they really had never dealt with a Cuban kid either. And another factor, which I think is a huge factor, is when I went to Florida, there were no African-American players. Now, the year after I was recruited, the first African-American players came to the University of Florida. Almost all of the Southeastern Conference did not have any black players. That really surprised me. And one of the things that surprised me is, like, I went to Ocala, which my roommate was from Ocala, and his dad's office had separate bathrooms for blacks and whites and separate drinking fountains. That blew me away. I had never seen that.
We're talking with Carlos Alvarez, a Cuban-American raised in Miami in the 60s. He was known as the Cuban Comet because he played football at the University of Florida, and he set records that still hold to this day. He was recently inducted into the Greater Miami Chamber of Commerce Sports Hall of Champions. He joined us from the studios at WFSU in Tallahassee. We'll continue this conversation in just a moment here on Sundial on WLRN. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. We now return to our conversation with Carlos Alvarez. He was dubbed the Cuban Comet when he played football at the University of Florida back in the late 60s. He was a Cuban-American raised in Miami, never knew the game of football until the age of 11, and then he fell in love with it. He was recently inducted into the Greater Miami Chamber of Commerce Sports Hall of Champions, and he joined us from the studios of WFSU in Tallahassee. Let's go back to that conversation.
Who called you the Cuban Comet? Who gave you that nickname?
That nickname comes from the publicity director at the University of Florida, Norm Carlson. And one day there was he was giving kind of like a press conference, and I think played a couple of games, and they said, you know, does he have a nickname or something that people call him? And, you know, my friends, you know, at Florida sometimes called me, they called me all kinds of things, like El Gato, the cat, and Chico, and, you know, really some of it was just really stupid stuff. And some reporter said, why not the Cuban Comet? And Norm Carlson said, that sounds good to me. We'll call him the Cuban Comet. The reason I know that is there's a newspaper article about it. That's the name, which is kind of interesting because, you know, back then a lot of players had nicknames. You know, people used to give more nicknames than now.
There was a game I was reading about in your college career when the Gators came to the Orange Bowl to play the Canes, and there was a lot of buzz about that game, and a lot of it's because of you. And you took the field that day in your hometown. Take us back. What was that game like?
Well, there's two games, really, that I played in the Orange Bowl when I was in the varsity, one of my sophomore year and one of my senior year. And they're both pretty eventful. My sophomore year, we had only lost one game. We were coming down to play the Hurricanes. And it was homecoming for me because by that point, I had already made a couple of All-American teams that were already out. And it was a Friday night game. There was a lot of press about my coming down. Of course, I had gotten a lot of press that year. In the Orange Bowl, the Hurricanes used to draw around, you know, 25,000, 30,000 to the Orange Bowl. And over 70,000 people showed up for that game. And a lot of them, that was the first time that a lot of Cubans, I think half of those were my family, that was the first time that a lot of Cubans saw college football or any kind of football. So that was very eventful. And nicely enough, you know, and this is really why I have such a great appreciation to the coaches I had at Florida, they knew how important that game was. And the game plan had a lot of, you know, I ended up catching 15 passes.
Which is the record, by the way. It's the record at UF.
Right, still the record at UF. And two touchdowns and about, I don't know, something like 240 yards. By the way, I had what I think consider the elite quarterback of the era, a Tim Tebow like quarterback, John Reeves, and he was absolutely on that night. Then we come back our senior year and we're not having a very good year. Neither are the Hurricanes, but John has the opportunity to break the NCAA record on passing yards, and that's the game of the famous, and you may have heard it, called the Florida Flop. That's where, towards the end of the fourth quarter, Florida, we're way ahead, and Miami is just running the ball. I mean, they're behind by 30 points or something, but they're just running the ball because the crowd has started to chant, let him score so we can get the ball back and break this record. John needed something like 10, 15 yards and to break the record, but Miami's trying to run the clock out. And so Miami was around the Florida 15-yard line, and Florida calls a timeout, and the coach at the time, who I did not necessarily get along with very much because we had had a coaching change, finally said, let him score, which is really what we all wanted so that we could get the ball back. And so he sent the play in, and unfortunately it's not a play that we had practiced very much to let the other team score. I think like 9 out of the 11 players just flopped on the ground. That's how come it's called the Florida Flop. And sure enough, Miami runs a sweep and runs in, and controversy has lasted until now and will last probably the next 100 years.
The infamous Florida Flop. There it is.
We get the ball back, and I actually ended up catching the pass that broke the record for John. And then the Florida band broke into a Jesus Christ Superstar. And then the whole team, this is as the game is ending, and then the whole team jumps into the dolphin pool and just celebrates.
And you brought up the pool. People may not realize that there was a pool in the Orange Bowl where the Dolphins played that had a dolphin in it.
Right. They brought it in for the games. The dolphin wasn't there when we jumped in on
right.
in it.
But, yeah. That would have been interesting, too.
That would have been.
You took a shot at playing professional football. I believe it was the Dallas Cowboys that picked you up in the draft. But whatever happened to your career?
So what happened was after my sophomore year, I was running track at Florida, And for some, I know the reason now, but I didn't know it back then, my knee started to swell. So anytime I ran really hard, I could do like a two-hour workout, but then afterwards my knee would swell. And it took 6 months to get it diagnosed. And finally, the Auburn team doctor diagnosed it as basically early arthritis based on a basketball injury I had in high school. And no way to really to operate, although they tried, which is basically kind of think of the end of your femur and basically scraping that so you get a scar tissue on it. And they did that operation after my junior year. But then by the end of my senior year, I needed two more operations because I had just really destroyed my knees. And I had no idea I was going to get drafted, but the Dallas Cowboys just took a chance and drafted me and told me and actually flew me out there and basically said, look, show us that your knee will not swell and also that you can run the 40 in the same time that you ran it when you were a sophomore. And basically the contract was unbelievable. It was a great contract if I could show them that. And they said, we know it's going to take you a year, so go to law school because we know you're going to law school. And I was going to go to law school at Duke already. And he said, after the year, come back and let's give it a shot. And I was just thrilled. I thought, excellent. So that year, it's the hardest year I've ever worked. I worked out every single day. I studied my butt off. But I could never, at the end of the day, I could never run full speed and not have my knee swell. Without that, it would have been foolish to even try. So then I just took the other path, and the path of law.
And you're an environmental lawyer.
I'm an environmental land use lawyer. I was for many years doing litigation in that area. And now I've devoted really the last 18 years of my practice to alternative dispute resolution, and I do mediations, mostly in cases where there's a land use environmental issue. I, for example, did the when they were dredging the Port of Miami to get the bigger ships from the Panama Canal, and there was controversy about that between the city and environmental groups and the Corps of Engineers. That's the kind of mediations I do.
When you look back on your life, especially that football career, the college career, what could have been in the pros possibly, what do you think about?
Well, it's really interesting because there's always without question, if somebody said to me, "Well, we'll give you five more years of knees," would you have played pros? And the answer is yes, I would have played pros. Would you have played pros knowing then what now has become evident that there's going to be the possibility of having brain injuries and things of that sort? You know what the answer would be? As crazy as it sounds, the answer would probably be yes. I still would want to play it because I just love the game. I just love the whole thing. I just love doing. So I probably would have done that. So there's a part of me that missed not playing. At the same time, I have had such a rich life that there's no complaint whatsoever in the way my life has evolved. I'm very happy with the things that have happened, the experiences that I've had, and that's just one of those things that wasn't meant to be. But at the same time, I could have had that injury 2 years earlier, and there would be no Cuban Comet that played football. It would be only the Cuban Comet that played baseball.
And again, that is Carlos Alvarez. He was known as the Cuban Comet. He was a Cuban immigrant who was introduced to the game of football at the age of 11 at Miami's Northwest Boys Club. Fell in love with the game, went on to play at the University of Florida, became an All-American, still holds receiving records at UF to this day. Again, he was recently inducted into the Greater Miami Chamber of Commerce Sports Hall of Champions. He was joining us from the studios of WFSU in Tallahassee. That's all for the program. I'm Luis Hernandez. Talk to you tomorrow.